Are we going?
Into podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
Advertiser call.
Billis Major at your service.
Don't forget me.
Sarah, did you forget me?
Oh, let's go, that's class!
There is no such thing as...
Is that a song where like it's secretly kind of fucked up because
maybe it's one of those songs where I just love singing it, just like the it's part where it goes such a good hit.
It's written by Jim Steinman, who did like all the Meatloaf songs. Meatloaf covered it all. Meatloaf did the cover in 2006. The B-side was a song called so you know. Apparently Meatloaf, it was written for Meatloaf, according to Meatloaf. According to Jim Steinman, it wasn't written for Meatloaf, but okay. Are you coming to pot me away?
Yes. Hello. Let's go.
Yes. Hello. Night terrors.
Go ahead.
3rd of September 2011. Very close to the 10th anniversary of 9/11, when you think about it. Directed by Richard Clarke, who...
God!
Yeah. Listen, I'm taking whatever's coming to my mind right now. Basically not fully disassociated, but like I was in the queue of the shop today, and I was buying some nice little treats because I was like, it's my lunch break and I need sugar. And I like fully just out of nowhere, just complete, like I was looking at a packet of like sweets or something, and I completely just, my mind went blank, and like the cashier was like, you can come now. I looked at them. I was like, okay. I just stood there because I didn't like comprehend, like, oh, they're actually telling me to like come to the till. So I'm a bit snookered. But it's directed by Richard Clarke, who, we spoke about during Doctor's Wife, because he did that one as well. And written by Mark Gatiss. And this was going to be episode 3, but they decided to swap it with Black Spot. I gotta
tell you something. I was so into this episode, and then it literally was a moment where I was like, God damn, whoever wrote this, absolute genius. And, oh, God, what a fresh, original voice. And then I opened the, like, who did this? And then when I saw those two letters, I literally slapped my face so hard. I audibly went, ow.
Oh, he does some stuff, I don't know. So in a sentence, Doctor Who is drawn to a block of flats by a small, terrified child whose parents are tired, and then Amy and Rory and some of the other tenants in the place are brought into the kid's dollhouse, and it's home to some evil dolls that turn people into more dolls, including Amy. And it turns out the kid is actually an alien who inserted himself into the parents' lives, and the dad convinced him that he is not to be scared because he's loved, and then that frees them all from the house, and then they go away. Here's the thing. I know how you feel about this one. And I don't hate this one, but to me, this is the epitome of an episode 9, or not even episode 9, an episode like 7, where they're like, we need to just kind of have something here for this week while we work on other stuff. And it like, I think as a concept, it's interesting, but I do have a lot of reservations about like a lot of the stuff. And one of them is just that like, it never really feels like something that kind of, it never really stands out to me as much as I would hope it would. I think my main thing is like, they should all be in the dollhouse, or the dollhouse thing of like the doctor and the dad should be like minute 13, not minute 35. But I'm going to see the 4 to you because you told me that you adored this one until a certain point.
Okay. Yeah. I think if you had stopped me, I'd even say like 3 minutes before the episode ended, I would have told you, holy shit, this is probably in like my top 15 list now. I was in such a glow. I was having such a wild time. I had not seen this before. So when I started watching it, I was like, why did I skip this one? I don't remember. I don't remember why. I haven't remember why I skipped it. I haven't recalled. But the whole time I was like, wow, I was enjoying it. It's not like groundbreaking. It's a very simple story. I think the cinematography and the direction in this one is really fucking good. It's an overdrive to make up for the fact that the plot is not all there. I was willing to give the plot a pass for a long time because there were even moments that scared me, and that's so rare for this stuff to happen. but then something happened in the last 2 minutes that honestly really soured me on the episode. And that was the moment when George's mom went, oh, and now he's fixed. Is that it? And the doctor's like, yep, he's fixed. And I was like, oh, I actually hate that. And I'll tell you why. I haven't done any research on this, but it felt to me that there was an attempt being made from the start to not equate, but at least to draw upon the experience of having a neurodivergent child. And comparing this to like the story. So you think about all these moments. The best moments in the story are the moments where they're just like doing these plots that would not be out of place in a, you know, like a serious drama about like someone who is dealing with the fact that their child has some kind of neurodivergence. And I think the best part of the episodes are the parts that have to do with that. Like I said, the last line the dad says, whatever you are, whatever you do, you'll always be my son. That's the theme. That's great. It's a very simple theme. It's not life-changing. I cried because it was really just well executed. And then to have the kid be like, and now I'm fixed at the end, I was like, oh, you can't do that. Because suddenly it just felt hollow. It just felt like you were just stealing all of these real signifiers and like real things, things that people have to deal with, and then just like throwing out when the story is done. And that really soured me at the end. I was like, no, that's like, I really didn't like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe Mark Gatiss is like, that was never my intention to try to make it seem like he was a character who had autism or something like that. Like George had autism. But to that, I would say, sure feels like you wrote it like he had autism. Like, It is just so, from the first thing he, and again, any kid can have a ritual, but the first thing he does is like, I need you to hit this light 5 times, and I need you to do this specific ritual thing, and the way that he's like, and suddenly like, he's super hypersensitive to these sounds that didn't used to be a problem, he's scared of everything, he doesn't cry was the one that made me go, oh, okay, that's what they're going for. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It just felt like it's too coincidental for it to be like, it's too obvious for it to be a coincidence.
I do agree with you, though. The thing of like, is he fixed? Yeah, is a really stupid thing to throw in. I don't know. I really do think my main thing is that like, not my main thing, but like one of the things that I really just do think they needed to, and it goes back to what we were saying before about the structure and stuff, they need to be in the house way earlier, I think, than what they are in the house for.
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's such a late in the game thing, but like, okay, and now they're in the house. Because the house stuff is really cool, to like, you know, there's like, because it's a doll's house, and like the dolls are creepy.
Yes. The transformation scene is creepy as fuck.
That
terrifying.
That freaked me out so much at the time. Especially because, and
it freaked me out so much now.
Yeah, but I don't want to be rude. This is going to be really mean. And I want
are you going to make fun of the guy who's playing the landlord? He's playing the landlord. It's fine.
Yeah. He has a very like particular look.
Character actor, episode. Yes.
And when he's turned into a doll, because he has that particular look, which is like, you know, it's like he's like, I know he hasn't shaved his eyebrows, but it looks like he's like shaved his eyebrows. He's got like, you know, it looks like he's got like Dick Tracy goon makeup on some place. Like it looks like his face is like is so angular and so like, you know, kind of specific, that when they turn him into a doll, it's even more terrifying, because like he already had that kind of aura to him of like, you know, a guy who's not a great guy, because he's a landlord. His dog, because his dog is just like kind of, you know, what the hell, what's going on? It kind of needs to be a bit, because this is one I'm gonna make a comparison to that I think works. This is kind of like another kind of fear thing, because it's like, you know, this small community where people are going missing. Well, they're going missing, but like they're not going missing. There's no like prior knowledge of them going missing, I guess, because
because I don't think that's, hold on, that's not the, it's sort of like, it's not the point of this.
Oh no, first no, of all, it must sense. I'm saying that, like, you know, in terms of like fear is a story about like this parent and their child who is like, you know, obviously Chloe Weber is more kind of coded as like this child who just doesn't have friends because they were, you know, the victim of this horrible kind of, you know, ongoing abusive situation. And, you know, as a result, she's very withdrawn. She's very kind of, you know, kind of, she doesn't have a lot of friends or whatever, you know, she's kind of, she's a victim, you know. And also with George, it's more that like he is, you know, in this kind of situation, and he's, you know, he's lonely as well. But obviously he is the alien, whereas, you know, Chloe had a solo spot and stuff. But they're both episodes about like the parental bond and, you know, overcoming, you know, these problems within that parental bond and, you know, embracing this kind of loving feeling. And obviously with Fear Her, the point is like these people are going missing. Where are they going missing? Whereas at this one, this child is like so powerful and so special, like they were able to breach the vortex and send a message to be like, can you come help me, please? And like, I think the fact that like the resolution, because they do this resolution a lot, obviously, like, you know, like the power of love will conquer all. I think it works really well here, because it's obviously like ultimately the whole thing is like hinges on Daniel Mays, who's really, really good, I think, as a dad. Really, really great performance. And it hinges on his character, you know, realizing in real time that like this kid is actually like a cuckoo who, you know, came into our lives because he needed like a father figure, and he needed like a parental figure, he needed love. And it hinges on that character being able to accept like, okay, you know, we were taking advantage of, obviously, but like I'm gonna be like, I'm already his dad, I'll always be his dad, I'm going to like make sure that he knows that he's loved and he's like, you know, safe in that love. Like I think you know, it works well, but I think there is just something that is not there, that is, it's what we would call a je ne sais quoi, that I can't really put my finger on what I think is missing, but I think there's something missing that just doesn't really.
I think what's missing is because the ending is emblematic of the fact, like, because we saw the neurodivergent thing, and I think Gatiss probably didn't. I think that extra step he needed to make that connection even stronger, and to make that je ne sais quoi, and to elevate it from just like a love saves all to a, oh, like, it worked for me because I'm a sucker for these kinds of stories. I mm-hmm. like, you put a parental figure being like, I love being a parent, I cry. I'm in tears. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I have to admit that, like, it is a bit of like, like you were saying, like, I was taking advantage. It is a bit of like a conceptual. It's not as emotional and tangible and real as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard for you to, like, understand, like, really empathize. It's sort of like it exists too much in the land of themes and not enough in the land of emotions, I guess, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
For you, for me personally, I think it exists more in the land of emotions than in the land of themes, which is actually like why the Doll's House thing sequences feel so that you felt like to me, the reason I think they should have gotten to that earlier is because those sequences feel so listless. Like there's so much, like, we're just waiting for them to realize they're inside a doll's house. Like mm-hmm. we're just waiting for them to realize this. And they make it up by putting in a lot of like emotion and fear and like these really scary sequences, legitimately scary sequences, and these really good emotional sequences with the doctor and the dad. But I don't think it ever comes full, it ever coalesces into something complete
mm-hmm.
to satisfy you per se.
Does that make sense? Yeah, my thing is, like, I think if you're going to do the dollhouse and you're going to do, like, these people around the place are getting pulled in, you kind of need that to be, like, a point of the episode, or maybe beforehand that, like, people have been missing from, like, places because they've been sucked into the dollhouse rather than being, like, oh, and, you know, at this point, by the way, this old woman's going to be pulled in and this guy's going to be pulled in. You know, it feels like they do kind of need to commit to, like, there's a mystery here of where has everyone gone? Oh, they're gone into this dollhouse. Because, like, I get what you're saying as well, like, but it does, like, there is a real kind of disconnect, I think, inherently there from the dollhouse thing, because it's not really fully kind of revealed. I don't know, like, yeah, I don't know. It is just one of those ones where, like, I'm just kind of, I think one of the issues is that, like, and it's no fault of its own, this was one of those episodes that was on TV all the time. Like, because Series 6 had been, the rights to Series 6 were, like, the easy. I have a feeling they were the easiest ones to get because Series 6 was on every single, every single day.
Well, so Series 6 was the one they really pushed.
Yeah. So
didn't Series 6 have the intros to catch up people with the idea of Doctor Who?
It's the ones that Amy were like, my name is Amy Pond, and then I had an imaginary friend, which I think it's like, it's in front of every single Series 6 episode, even after, like, it's in front of every single episode, even after, like, they don't really need to have them anymore. They still stick this, like, I'm Amy Pond, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I think what's interesting, like, I keep skipping ahead in these, but I apologize, but, like, I think it's interesting that three episodes after this, they do the exact same love conquers all kind of thing. And it feels
I was thinking about that.
Disingenuous.
Okay.
And, yeah.
I was going to say.
Yeah. The version they do this in three episodes is maybe the most egregious and stupid version they could have done of that thing, but that's for another day.
That was one of the things I was thinking, because I was watching it. I was like, oh, this is so much fun. Why did I skip this? I don't remember. And then I was like, oh, shit. In three episodes, they're going to do the exact same fucking plot.
Mm-hmm. Only it will be a beloved chat show host, and not Daniel Mays.
It'll be me, James Gordon.
Like I said, Daniel Mays is really good. Daniel Mays is someone who, I believe, was And Mike, I think he graduated like Mike Lee regular guy status for like a couple of movies, and then ended up in a lot of stuff that like just isn't really kind of at the level of what he's given roles. Of course, the landlord, as I said to you, is in the movie 300. And The Omen, I didn't look up. or The Mom. Mm-hmm. But or The Kid. I don't know what The Kid's doing these days. I also like how there was a brief... there was a brief thing. I think it was either on Gallifrey or it was on the wiki where... because obviously Tim Shaw's race are the Stenza. Or is it, yeah, and the kid is the Tenza. And people were like, oh, did Chris Chibnall not watch Moffat era and not know the thing? I was like, I doubt even Mark Gatiss would tell you what the name of this thing that he wrote in an episode.
He definitely doesn't. Tenza is his Winter Soldier activation code. If you say Tenza, he's going to like... yes, sir. Like, what do you need me to do?
He starts
choking. He's like, what happened? I was suddenly
and Nick
he's just pretending. He does remember what.
Nick Freaks is watching from afar, being like, yes, and I'll wait for some more Sam Kisgaard master audios to come through my door right now. yeah, I don't know.
That's what Nick Briggs says when he needs. A new
swimming pool.
New thing to watch. Wow, I love how I bailed on that joke.
We're bailing on a lot of stuff today. For example, I bailed on saying the word, I said wonkered earlier on. I don't know. There's something... With regards, because obviously this was going to be episode 3, and they were like, it's too dark to throw us in after the series opener. And also, I'd say it would have been weird to go from like a two-part about a missing kid to a story about another kid. But they obviously like have a kid in series 3, episode 3. There's a line in this where... And it's so clearly ADR'd that, like, I do wonder why it's in there, where the doctor was like, here we are, all of us, in the flesh. Do you think that was meant to be a joke?
Yeah, I think that was meant to be, like, when this was supposed to be episode 3, people would have gone back and thought,
he said a line, even though all their backs are the camera, and it's quite clearly not something they recorded on location.
Read a genuine article.
It's a bit like in Miracle Day when that person's like, hey man, believe, but like they can tell like it wasn't recorded on scene. I don't know. I think this run of episodes is so strange to me, and we'll get to it in later ones, because I think the next episode I think is one of my favorites from this run. But it has a problem I think a lot of them have, which is that the structure of these episodes are just completely out of whack. Both from an individual structure and also like a season structure. I think having these episodes play like go from one to one to one to one to one, there's no real flow. But we'll get to that. I don't know. I don't know, like there's not a lot in it for me, to be quite honest with you, and I was hoping for like another fear where I couldn't be like, oh my god, that was brilliant, whatever, but like I do just think that it is just the episode that it is. It's not the worst one. I know a lot of people are like, this is the worst episode of series 6, it's the worst one. You know, there's nothing going on here. I think.
Oh my god, no! What are we talking about?
There is pretty handily a far worse episode that we keep talking around. That's coming up, and I'd also argue that this is better than like Doctor's Wife. It's certainly better.
This is better than Doctor's Wife. Yeah. It's prettier than Doctor's. I cannot believe that it's so much prettier than Doctor's Wife.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to you, please, just if you can watch just the first 20 minutes of this up until the trash can part. I would say up until the trash can part. I love the trash bags. Lady gets eaten by trash bags. I love that. That's classic Doctor Who shit. Mm-hmm. I love that. Give me more. But the elevator sequence, genuinely well shot, like startlingly well shot, well framed, well executed, well acted. Just so many little moments of like good little shots. When the dad is like, because she can't have kids, and then he realizes, wait, then how? And the camera just pans down, and you see that the kid was there all along. That was fucking great. Like, that was great directing.
Yeah, it is. It, and I mean, funny enough, it's the same guy as Doctor's Wife. So you're like,
oh, wow.
You're getting praise for the wrong episode in general, buddy, in the public sphere, because you know your work here is far better. Even like the way they shoot the doll stuff when they're in change is really, really good. Like shooting most of it from behind where like they're shaking and stuff is really great. The peg dolls, of course, you could buy individual figures of all of them if you want to have them on your shelf. Because this is we'll get to like next season, because next season is when the bubble bursts and they introduce smaller figures. I remember being so disappointed they did that because they were like much more like flimsy and whatever. This was like the absolute peak of we're gonna make a figure for everything, because like you have like I think you could buy like a pack of like 15 cyber mats. You could buy each peg doll by themselves or together.
You know how I know that? You know how I know that? Because all of those figures are going for $5 at Gallifrey One.
Mm-hmm.
So I got two Crystal David Tennant. I don't know where this one is from, but it's literally just a Crystal David Tennant. I got one pig guy from Daleks Take Manhattan. I got a wooden Cyberman. I don't fucking know. I got like a Ralston. Oh, I got one of the like a Ralston figure from the Five Doctors, the one that goes mm-hmm. and jumps. I got it for like $5. So they should go back to making random figures of people so that 10 years from now I can get like a Joel Fry from Joy to the World figure at Gallifrey 2035.
You go into there and they have figures of I'm struggling to think of a minor character in those episodes. Half the people from Dot and Bubble, you probably have figures of them.
The racist from Dot and Bubble. Yeah. I would actually get a figure of Lady B. Pepper with if there was. Okay, Doctor Who, if you're listening to this, here's how you do it. If you make like a little bubble floating around her head that you can then remove, I think that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Doctor Who,
please make a figure of the racist.
They would have made like so many. They would have made a figure of like the ambulances.
Did they make a Hitler figure? Oh my god!
There was an insane, absolutely insane publicity photo of it in this of the guy playing Hitler, where I'm like, you guys did not need to take a photograph of this guy doing this because the vibe is like. Sonic Adventure Sonic, where like he's giving attitude. It's like why did you take this photograph of this guy like clearly trying to be like, you know, I'm posing. I'll send you the photo because
I know which one. Yeah, David, honestly, please, again, I've seen the photo.
listen, you'll see it again because I just copied it. I'm gonna copy and paste it into this, but like the attitude he's given is just like completely thin.
Well, Doctor.
Okay,
we meet again.
I'm gonna look up Doctor Who Series 6 figures because there's one I'm trying to remember. Because I know they did like So you could get a silent. You could get.
Sorry. He literally is just going. It really just feels like he's going. Doctor Or like he's shaking his hand into the air.
Sorry. There is a in the Series 6 promotional like photo for like all the figures, there is a photograph of disembodied hands. I'll send to you because there's a caption on that. It'll tell you exactly, and we already know that their minds are on this at this point, but this is like on all the promo photos for all the figures.
Oh yeah, the flesh.
It, a pair of disembodied hands with like pulling a big glob of white glue apart.
Dude,
like,
no, I've been looking. If anyone can give me how much is it? I kind of really want that tub of goo, Doctor Who.
I
just want to touch it. I just want to see what it's like. Oh, I had a flesh doctor. I gave him to a friend of mine. I don't regret it. I actually am very happy about that. But it's the funniest figure because it's literally just an 11th doctor with like transparent head, but they painted the eyes red. It's like, I'm evil.
Can I show you one of my favorite toys from this this run of figurines? It's maybe one of the stupidest ones they've done, which is make your own Ganger figures. But it's Matt Smith.
I found one here on eBay for like $32. Do you want to? Should I get?
I'm okay. But they've basically taken a prototype of Matt Smith, put a jumpsuit on him, and been like, you can make your own doctor with a toxic powder. A skeleton.
Sentences you love to read. Mix up, quote, the flesh, quote, liquid. You love to see that. That's like dystopian sci-fi background text. Like, don't worry about the flesh.
Oh my consume God.
The liquid.
There's a photograph of half of the doctor molded onto that skeleton, and it's the most horrifying thing I've seen in my life. Look at this.
Jesus Christ. It really does look like the T-1000 mid-melting.
Oof. That's horrifying.
Should I pay $31 Australian dollars for the goo pod?
No.
But it's $31 Australian dollars.
You should absolutely buy Corroded Cyberman or 11th Doctor with beard. Or they made a Cyberman with a flesh mask. Why? What kid is like, I really want the Cyberman to... Oh my God. Ooh. Oh
my. I found a photo of the flesh. Could that be the... cover image for the episode. Can you put that very So listeners, please look into the cover image. Look into the upper right corner. You will see this image there. Enjoy it. Oh, that is ugly as hell.
Who's buying that? Like,
oh, that looks so bad, man.
The problem with the photo you sent, well, one of the many problems is that why are the legs pointing that way? Like someone has placed the legs to point as if like someone's legs have been spread out like that. It's horrible. It also seems to be on some kind of like, if not restaurant, then like
Bed Bath & Beyond. a Saya's Hobby House. Yeah, it really does look like somebody just threw a Matt Smith figure into some decrepit nacho cheese.
Mm-hmm. Or some kind of chewing gum. But yeah, I don't know.
Enjoy the nighters you're going to get from this photo, listeners.
Mm-hmm. I hope you enjoyed our toy corner because, goodbye. Bye.
Next time on Pod Tour Who Cast.
Where am I?
You're in a faster time stream.
Baby.
You didn't save me.
So I have to choose which wife do I want?
Which one's Amy One?
If they touch you, you go to sleep.